Before you listen to today's broadcast, can I ask you to do three things? First, pray with me that God would use this show to touch many lives in a lasting way. Second, if you're blessed by the broadcast, share it with others. Tell others about the Line of Fire. And third, would you pray about standing with us in support with a one-time gift or as a monthly torchbearer to help us spread the fire? If you'd like to stand with us, go to askdrbrown.org. Click on support. Be blessed.
Emails. Most of us have a love-hate relationship with our inbox, but I want to tackle this from a spiritual perspective today. Is email more of a blessing or of a curse? We'll talk about it today on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the Line of Fire.
I have been wanting to talk about this subject for some time now, especially since I got a fascinating book called The Tyranny of Email by John Freeman. We're going to focus in on the question of emails. Are they a blessing or a curse? Today on The Line of Fire, we've got some news updates of interest to you, some things you might not hear in other places, but you will hear them today on The Line of Fire. Maybe get your blood boiling a little bit. Michael Brown, thank you for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. On Facebook, join in the interaction already on this question at Ask Dr. Brown. That's Ask Dr. Brown. Okay, let me lay out a couple of questions for you first. And I think we're going to hit on this from some angles that may surprise you. Based on the interaction so far on Facebook, it seems that I appreciate the input, I appreciate the interaction, and it's true to reflecting what's in people's hearts and minds and lives, but I think there are a few other angles we need to look at today. But first, some basic questions for you. Number one, what's good about email? What do you like about email? What do you think is great about email? What do you appreciate about email? What's positive about email? I mean, just in your natural life and overall life, in your business, in your personal life, or family, whatever it is, what's good about email? Second question, what's bad about email? What is it about email that you don't like? What is it about email that you consider negative? What is it about email that is a drain, a drag to you? Has your own life been helped since email became part of it? I'm assuming most of you listening online, radio, wherever you're listening, most of you listening do email of one sort and another. Some of you are, quote, power users. Some of you just use it sparingly. But this day and age, most of you, I would think, use email. Has it improved your life overall? Has it hindered your life overall? Would you go back to the days before email? Would you say, no, email's been good, but we've got to put some parameters on it? What's good about it? What's bad about it? 866-34-TRUTH. Oh, if you intentionally don't use email, I'd love to hear from you and find out why. If you say, everybody's using it, my friends use it, my family use it, I have chosen not to use it, I'd like to hear why. I have one of my friends, a spiritually devoted man, who doesn't do email. He has folks on his staff that do email. I talked to another guy. He's a very savvy Christian leader. He's well-connected, but he said he doesn't do email. His staff does email. If you have chosen not to do email, tell me why. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to get into some of the thoughts here in this book, The Tyranny of Email. I wonder how many of you check your email first thing when you wake up in the morning. And if you get up in the middle of the night, and in the middle of the night, check your email. And if you check your email while your eyes are still focusing in the morning. Or am I talking about myself with all these questions? All right. Before I get into this further, I want to give you some interesting updates having to do with the tragic shooting that took place over the weekend. I saw an interview with the intern, Daniel Hernandez Jr., that's being hailed, rightly so, as a hero, credited with Representative Giffords' intern, and credited with helping to save her life with the way that he held her and tried to stop the bleeding until the medics arrived. when I saw the interview, I just had this suspicion that he was gay. Nothing that he said overtly, but I just had a feeling, I just had a suspicion that he was gay. And now I'm reading some reports at DallasVoice.com, a premier media source for LGBT Texas, so a gay publication. Gay intern credited with saving Gifford's life. And he was a member of the City of Tucson Commission on Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Issues. What does this tell us? It tells us what we should all know, that there are many fine people that identify as gay and lesbian and bisexual, transgender. There are many people who are great employees. There are many people who are great employers. There are many people who are fine neighbors. There are many people who are good friends. There are many people who are beloved family. There are many people who are brilliant. There are many people who are sensitive. There are many people who are caring. There are many people who are compassionate. There are many people who are doing a lot of good who identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. If that's news to you, welcome to the world. Okay? So I want to say that publicly. And for those to whom this is news, you know, in 9/11, one of the men that was instrumental in the let's roll, let's take these guys down on the plane that crashed, that never reached its destination. He was openly gay. What does it remind us of? That they're courageous people who identify as gay or lesbian or bisexual, transgender. There are heroic people. There are people, I'm sure, in different aspects of society that have not come out as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, whom we look up to, whom we respect and admire. And others who have come out that, if aside from that aspect of their lives, we would look at them as role models in different ways. So if that's news to you, like I said, get over it and recognize that if you just think, well, if a person identifies as gay, then they must be just some horrific, terrible person every area of life. That's not true. It's absolutely not true. And if you've got that view as a Christian, you've got a very unchristian view of things. Let's recognize we're in a broken, fallen world, that brokenness, fallenness takes expression in many different ways. And of course, if we act on things that are wrong in God's sight, they are immoral, they are wrong. You should know that I, of all people, not backing away from that. But I think it's important to, when you hear this, know this is not putting forth gay propaganda to report that, and that may be how it's used in the gay and lesbian community. The fact is, there are many fine people in many different ways in terms of their contribution to society that identifies gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender. Okay, some other news, related news in terms of gay activist news. Foxnews.com reported January 10th, so yesterday, protest arises over gay-only toilets in Brazilian school. As Brazil prepares for its annual spring carnival festivities, there is disagreement over a proposal that places toilets in samba schools that are designated for exclusive use by gay and transvestite participants. One of the top Rio de Janeiro samba schools preparing for March 4th to 9th event has protesters reminiscent of the forced separation between whites and blacks. They're referring to this as carnival apartheid, said Claudio Nascimento, the head of Brazil's anti-homophobia program. But supporters of the segregated toilets argue that they provide a safe area for their users. I don't see any problems, said Iran Araujo, carnival director who also heads cultural programs from the Independent League for Samba Schools. Oh, boy. I mean, I understand the logic. Okay, gay-only toilets, for transvestites, cross-dressers, those who identify as transgender. Why not? Okay, how about this? Are you ready? Those with high blood pressure, remember, Jesus is Lord. Brace yourself. How many of you have ever watched CNN and been frustrated because the coverage is so biased and it's claiming not to be? You know, for example, if you put on left-wing radio or right-wing radio, liberal radio, conservative radio, they may be claiming to accurately present the facts, but they are saying we're coming from a right-wing conservative position or left-wing liberal position, and that's known. That's a given. But CNN will always claim it's just giving you the news and it's being balanced and unbiased. So I've watched sometimes, Nancy and I'll get online and watch some news clip, and it's so frustrating because the way the person's interviewed that's coming from a godly perspective or perhaps a conservative perspective or biblical perspective on something. And I'm not saying that conservative perspective is always biblical, by the way. But they'll get grilled a certain way, and then the person on the other side is just given carte blanche to say what they want to say. Well, GLAAD, which is the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, and which vets a lot of scripts. Hollywood has to go through them in many ways. The TV shows and movies will often be vetted by GLAAD to make sure that the content is pro-gay, is not, quote, homophobic. Well, GLAAD is now petitioning CNN to stop inviting, quote, anti-gay guests. The Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation has created a petition in an effort to convince CNN to stop inviting what the organization deems anti-gay guests onto the network. In fact, GLAAD aims to fight against CNN's inclusion of the, quote, anti-gay industry as a whole when it covers issues and debates relevant to gay and civil rights issues. In other words, as much as CNN is biased already, as much as they are hardly giving an equal voice to those that say we don't accept the goals of gay activism, gay activists say, no, don't even give the other side a voice at all. I'm telling you, friends, this is where it's going. Oh, back with a whole lot more. Thanks for joining us, friends, on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, so glad to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH. Online, askdrbrown.org. By the way, did you get my e-blast today? Say, no, I didn't. Ah, well, then you got to sign up for our email list as I'm talking about whether email is a blessing or curse today. So make sure you do that, askdrbrown.org, right on the homepage. Just sign up for our email list. We now have two of my signature classes, two of the key classes I teach every year at Fire School of Ministry, Jewish Roots and Principles of Revival. Over 12 hours of material. You can watch them over a three-month period by video on demand in the privacy of your own home or as a church class or a group class or home study with a bunch of people. It's very inexpensive to do. It's super inexpensive to do it. Embarrassingly inexpensive to do it for the quality of what you'll get. But you need to sign up online, askdrbrown.org. You'll see it right there on the homepage, our online classes where we can study together. You'll be blessed. Trust me, you'll be blessed, enriched. All right, my question for you, what's good about email? What's good about email? What's positive about email? Yesterday I talked about anonymous communication online. Is it good or bad? I've been thinking about addressing the issues of email and then started reading this book. Actually, saw reference to it while I was flying. It was written up in one of the airline magazines while I was flying. I was flipping through it and spotted this. And one reason I was flipping through it is because I'm normally using electronic devices in the first few seconds right before you fly, or you're first in the air or about to land. You can't use your electronic devices, hence I couldn't read anything. So I picked up the magazine, started reading about this book, The Tyranny of Email, and bought it. And it raises questions, from some angles that I had not looked at, or perhaps I thought about but didn't look at as much. So what's good about email? What's positive about email? What do you like about email? What's negative? What is a drawback to it? 866-34-TRUTH. Let me read a little section from the book here, and then I want to start to talk this through. Is email more of a blessing or a curse? The author of The Tyranny of Email, John Freeman, says email goes with us everywhere now. We check it on the subway. We check it in the bath. We check it before bed and upon waking up. We check it even in mid-conversation, blithely assuming that no one will notice. Come on, how many times have you been sitting having a meal with someone, maybe in a restaurant, some other setting, and you can check your cell phone for the latest emails? It's not a disruption to the conversation. Yeah, I'm raising my hand. I've done it embarrassingly way too many times. We check from our loved ones' deathbeds. Okay, that haven't done. Even the most powerful people in the world do it. On most days during the 2008 presidential race, Barack Obama's BlackBerry was, quote, fastened to his belt to provide a singular conduit to the outside world as the bubble around him grew tighter and tighter throughout his campaign. President George W. Bush, who received 15,000 emails a day at the White House, of course he didn't personally receive them, said that one thing he looked forward to after leaving office was emailing, because the president doesn't email. There's even a service that allows you to send an email after you're dead. there's an hour or a minute or a second to spare, email is there. It is our electronic fidget. It would appear that we are spending surplus time emailing. The average office worker, John Freeman says, sends and receives 200 emails a day. And the figure is rising. Forget about time spent stumbling absentmindedly around the internet. This habit is destroying our ability to be productive. Do you agree with that? Email is destroying our ability to be productive. That's what John Freeman says. Is email hindering us from actually being productive? Information overload, Freeman says, is a $650 billion drag on the U.S. economy every year. Email has made us a workforce of reactors racing to keep up with a treadmill pace that is bound for burnout and breakdown and profound anger. The form's inherent blind spots always catch up with us. According to a survey in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, we misunderstand the tone of emails 50% of the time, and for good reason. There's no face on the other end to stop us in mid-sentence, to indicate that what we are in the process of saying is rude, not comprehended, or cruel. We say what we want, like the CEO who recently belittled the effect of mortgage foreclosures, inadvertently sending the email to someone who had just lost his home. The unlucky call this mistaken judgment. Psychologists call it disinhibition, and its pervasive effect, as can be witnessed every day in nasty comments appended to newspaper articles online, and the aggrieved tone and intent of some blog postings and email inboxes scorched by flame wars, has turned many parts of the internet into a nasty place. We talked about some of that yesterday. Freeman has some interesting insights in terms of the brain and how it reacts. I'm going to talk to you about that a little bit more. Let me go to the phone first. I may read some of the Facebook comments as well. Dale in High Point, you're up first. So what's your view, sir, on email?
Dr. Brown, first of all, I appreciate you taking my call. I appreciate your show and your ministry.
Well, thank you, sir.
I must be perfectly honest with you. Call me a 20th century guy. I don't like computers, don't like cell phones, don't like voicemail, any of that stuff. And I'm not saying there aren't some positive aspects to all of that. But I believe in the long run, and I believe it's more akin to the coming... can't think of the word right now, but I'm talking about end time.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a huge instrument as far as that goes. I'm no theologian. I love God. I love Jesus, and I believe a lot of the things that the Lord has blessed this world with for good. More often than not, it turns into something quite evil. And I hope I haven't rambled on for too long, but I hope you understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah, Dale, let me ask you a question. In terms of the end times,
yes.
Do you think it's just that everybody or the government or the one world order or the Antichrist, whatever you're expecting, is somehow going to have access to people or control through email, or are you talking about it from a different angle?
I wish you could see my face right now, what you said before, to the affirmative of what you just said.
Got it.
Of course, it's going to be an instrument used, and it is, of course, going to be a part of the New World Order, so to speak, having not just access, full access to those who are blind, who are unaware, and just basically don't care. And don't see it that way. They would say someone like me, they would call me paranoid or a zealot. And I hoped to the Lord in heaven that I am a zealot. But I don't mean, you know, some maniac who's out here saying everything in the world is evil. But evil is in the world.
Got it. And technology can be used in those evil ways. Hey, Dale, thank you so much for the call and the kind words. In your own life, friends. In your own life, is email primarily negative or primarily positive? And in your spiritual life, in terms of affecting who you are in God, is it primarily negative or primarily positive. We're going to probe a little bit further here and maybe get you to think. Oh, some more news of interest you don't want to miss. Stay with us. How is email shaping your life? Is it improving your life? Is it improving your life in God? Is it an enhancement? Would you say it is more positive or more negative? Oh, Joey, our producer just joining in. More negative. All right, thanks. I'll give you my views before the show is out. 866-34-TRUTH online. AskDrBrown.org. What about this book, The Tyranny of Email? There's a link on our website, AskDrBrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. John Freeman's book, The Tyranny of Email. And by the way, he gives you a whole history of ancient communication and how the post office started. And so a lot of fascinating details in the book. and you realize what communication used to be like compared to what it is like now. I want to read just a bit more of what he wrote here. He said that, according to some neurologists, we learn to interact with the world by mirroring others. Not only do we need to see people to understand them most effectively, but our mind learns how to move our limbs and make sense of the world by mirroring the actions of others. There are even neurons in our brain that fire only in response to mirroring the actions of others, and they're intimately connected with the parts of our brain that allow us to move and understand the world. The part of our brain that controls grasping motions shows heightened levels of neural activity when we see someone else pick up a glass of orange juice as if we were doing it ourselves. According to Marco Iacoboni, professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at UCLA, this has bolstered the notion that, quote, our mental processes are shaped by our bodies and by the types of perceptual and motor experiences that are the product of our movement through and interaction with the surrounding world. Consider then the ramifications of an era of communication in which we are disembodied as never before. In our new context of email overload, we are working in an environment in which there is nothing to mirror but our own words. By the way, on average, how many emails do you think you receive and send a day? Just on average, just curious to know. 866-34-TRUTH. When you're weighing in, you can give us that detail. On average, if you don't do email, well, you can tell us, but how many emails would you say on average you send and receive a day? I'm just looking on my online sent box. I don't know how many years back it goes, but it has in it 50, yeah, look at this, 52,588 messages sent. I have to see how far back it actually goes. Email overload. Look at what Freeman says. Who has time to think clearly when under assault by the tsunami of other people's needs? That's what it feels like when you turn on your computer first thing in the morning at the office and find 50 emails, the tide of your inbox always rising. One's instinct is to beat it back because email has reoriented time. Communication that once took hours, days, minutes now takes seconds. And the permitted reply has shrunk. Reply time has shrunk as well. Let an email linger for a day and you risk a rift in a relationship. A 2006 Cisco research paper concluded that failing to respond to a sender can lead to a swift breakdown in trust. Lose an email forever and you are sitting on an unexploded landmine. Now here, very important point Freeman makes. In the past, only a few professions, doctors, plumbers, perhaps emergency service technicians, prime ministers, required this state of being constantly on call. Now almost all of us live this way. Did you hear that? Let me repeat it. In the past, only a few professions, doctors, plumbers, perhaps emergency service technicians, prime ministers, required this kind of state of being constantly on call. Now almost all of us live this way. Everything must be attended to. And if it isn't, chances are another email will appear in a few hours asking if indeed the first message was received at all. Now, Nancy will tell you that as long as she's known me, we've been married, before we were married, I like getting mail. I look forward to the mail coming every year. Maybe I got something new in the mail. And then always I'd get a book in the mail or a journal in the mail or some important. I like mail. And I honestly have a love-hate relationship with email. On the one hand, because I'm a late-night person, I'll often be working, writing, studying, praying until 3 or 4 in the morning very commonly. Unless I have to start my day early, I'm not starting it until mid-morning or later in the morning really getting active. Sometimes I'll get up early and check emails and then go back to sleep. But if I wake up and there are only a few emails in my inbox, few for me, I don't like that. That bothers me. On the other hand, when there's a massive stack of them, that bothers me. And there's this feeling of I have to deal with them. Like I said, it's a love-hate thing. There's the adrenaline of something's happening, something's going on, and this and that. And on the other hand, there's the negative of all the stuff to deal with, and you feel like you have to beat it back, hence the tyranny of email. Because it's if you don't get to it, the next day there are more, and then there are more, and then there are more. I have one friend that will commonly have over 1,000 emails in his inbox. And it doesn't phase, well, it phases him a little. But it's different, you know, especially if you're on the phone in the old days before you had call forwarding or the call could be interrupted. You didn't know if someone was trying to call you while you're on the phone for an hour. They just got a busy signal. Think of getting off the phone and now you have 20 voicemails waiting for you. Things shift. But there's some spiritual dimensions, too, I want to talk about. First, your feedback. Fran in Jacksonville, what's your take?
Hi. I totally agree with you, but however, I don't use email that much. I use it to communicate with a friend or two from another country where I've been involved in missions or that type of thing. But and also, it's good to get emails back from businesses that I'm dealing with directly. But other than that, I get, you know, a little bit irritated when I do check my email with all kinds of bombarding solicitations from people that I wonder how on earth they even got my email.
Mm.
And most of the time I don't open them anymore because I found in the past that when I do, I can open up a virus, so I just spam them.
Got it. And so do you have your inbox set, Fran, so that the only thing that comes in your inbox is from people in your own address book and everything else goes into junk mail?
No, because I'm not that proficient in on the internet or anything. I don't use it every day. I don't even have a personal computer anymore.
Ah, okay.
I use it at my daughter's house when I'm there a couple of times a week and just to do my banking or ordering things online. And I get some devotional things and some Christian-oriented materials, which I keep. And I read whenever, you know, at my leisure when I'm able to. But I don't sit on the computer long enough. You know, I'm not like you, and I'm not like probably a big majority of the population that sits on the computer for a long period of time.
Hey, in the long run, that's probably for the best. Fran, thank you for weighing in. By the way, how's the weather in Jacksonville?
Terrible. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible.
How so terrible?
Well, it's in the 30s in the mornings. It runs up to about the 40s or 50s in the afternoon, but it's the humidity mixed with the cold here is not too good because we're so close to water. We're so close to the ocean, and there's a river that runs right by where I live. So
I wouldn't have thought that. Hey, Fran, thanks for the weather report as well. It's icy here in the Charlotte area, snowy, icy. I've got some news to share. We come back, may get the blood boiling a little bit more. So if you're driving, just calm yourself. And then I will give you my own reflections on the email issue. We come back. Michael Brown here on the Line of Fire. Glad to spend this time together with you. 866-34-TRUTH. We're talking about email today. Is it more of a blessing, more of a curse? I want to come at this from a few different angles with you. If you missed the announcement earlier in the program, you can now study online with me some of the best courses we've taught over the years. Video on demand with our PowerPoint presentations that you get as well. Just go to AskDrBrown.org. Jewish Roots class is now available. Principles of Revival class now available. So you can sign up, and then you have 3 months to take the course. Over 12 hours of material, very inexpensively, and a great way to be enriched and use it congregationally in your school as well. Okay, before I get back to email, I said I had some other news you should hear. Over the weekend, I guess it was Friday night, I saw it reported that the State Department announced that on passport applications, mother and father were being removed. Yes, mother and father were being removed and replaced by parent A and parent B. Do you know that in Spain, because of same-sex marriage being legalized and because of other things happening with family development, on birth certificates it says progenitor A and progenitor B. It no longer says mother, father. Friends, this is where this is going. This is the inevitable course of where this is going. And I don't want to get into all of the examples of this, but I've told you many times about a preschool right here in Charlotte where one of our Fire School of Ministry students was teaching. Not only did they have all of the Heather Has Two Mommy type books on a reading list, or a number of these on a reading list that they were supposed to read to four-year-olds. Of course, she just didn't do it. But she was not allowed to address the children as boys and girls because that would be making a gender distinction. She had to call them something like friends. Now, passport applications, instead of mother, father, you put parent A or parent B. Well, latest report now from the Associated Press, this was posted on Saturday, in a bid to forestall a backlash from congressional conservatives, Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton has ordered the State Department to amend a bureaucratic change that would have eliminated the titles father and mother with the gender-neutral term parent in reports of overseas births. Instead, it says mother or parent one, father or parent two. Isn't that delightful? The foundations of society, the foundations of male-female relationships, the foundations of husband, wife, mom, and dad, they are being undermined by those who claim to be fighting for equality and tolerance. No, they are fighting for, in the name of equality and tolerance, they're fighting for the transformation of our society in ways that will only be destructive. I'm looking at the website of GLAAD, Gay Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, and their petition to CNN calling them to, quote, keep away from the anti-gay industry. And I'm looking now at people that they've interviewed on CNN to give the other side of the story. And CNN is heavily biased in terms of these issues, heavily biased against the principles we'd hold to. And I'm looking, there's Peter Sprigg, who's a colleague with the Family Research Council. There is Bill O'Donoghue. I sat next to him when we were doing a CNN pilot program. He is with Catholic he's a Catholic activist. Maggie Gallagher, National Organization for Marriage. Tony Perkins, head of the Family Research Council. These are people whose pictures are on the page saying that CNN should not have anything to do with people like this. Don't give the other point of view. And it's saying, hey, if you were going to, this is actually a petition. They actually talk about these things. Look, if you were going to have a show about education, would you have people on who hate education? I mean, listen, friends, those calling for inclusion are absolutely exclusive. Those who use the word diversity, those who use the word tolerance are absolutely intolerant. It's all documented in massive detail in my forthcoming book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. It's probably going to be over 600 pages when it comes out, so that you can pick any part of it. It's like getting several books in one. Pick the part about the media. Pick the part about the schools. Pick the part about what's happening, children's schools, college campuses. Pick the part about what's happening in the law and the silencing of any opposition, any disagreement. Pastor, hear me. It's coming your way. It's coming your way. I'm not talking about getting political. I'm talking about standing up for what's right and truthful. It's coming your way. You're silencing if you don't stand now. I'm not telling you to order the book because it's not available yet, but mandatory reading once it's out. Okay, you know, I'm not going to have time to give some profound reflections on email. When we come back, I'm going to lay out what's positive, but what is negative from a spiritual viewpoint. and how we really have to get this under control. I just noticed from noon until showtime, it's 3 hours, sent out about 50 emails. Maybe your schedule's not like that. It can be positive, it can be negative, but is it a blessing or a curse? You don't want to miss these insights when we come back. Thank you for joining us, friends, on the Line of Fire broadcast as we're talking about email today, something that touches most of our lives. I want to give you my reflections now and then my bottom line about email. Obviously, there's a ton of stuff that's super positive. You can communicate so easily with so many people. The moment someone has a child in another part of the world, a friend has a baby or grandkid, you could shoot them a note. You can get a picture immediately. You can be updated on key news by the second. There's so many resources, spiritual resources you might get, devotional words, different things. You can be in interaction with folks that are lonely and shut in and don't have a lot of contact with the outside world. You can get a whole lot of business stuff done very quickly. I think we could come up with long, long lists of what's positive about it, especially when you think of what communication was like 100 or 200 years ago or going back even further. Again, the book by John Freeman. I haven't finished it yet. I've been too busy emailing. I haven't finished the book yet, The Tyranny of Email. But I'm eager to see some of the strategies that he lays out to help deal with the tyranny of it. So why does he speak of tyranny? Well, because this thing is increasing. More and more people have access to you. More and more people can reach you. More and more people can touch you. And it builds up. Many times I'll just answer as many things as I can, as quickly as I can, because I don't want this now waiting for me the next day, and many of the things are valid. Concerns, questions, problems that people are raising, issues. If you don't respond, it's like you're putting them off. But there are only so many hours in the day, and there are priorities. There's something negative with email in that it is impersonal. We often can misunderstand each other. Something negative with email, which is, have we been wired physically, mentally, by God to be sitting in front of a monitor as long as we are, or just texting back and forth? Is that the way we've been made to interact? Those are other questions. There's the degree that it can be a distraction. Look, there are addictions. I have no question that I have to be disciplined in this, because it's so easy for me to be addicted to being wired. You know, sometimes flying overseas, I like the fact that I can't be reached for hours, 15 hours, 18 hours, sometimes longer, and you just take a break. Sometimes you think, man, you know, just as soon as you land, everybody's got their phones, their Blackberries, their, you know, they're immediately checking, okay, what came in? After an hour flight, we're checking, catching up, and constantly on call. And the junk mail bombardment, other stuff that comes in every day, maybe you've had a weakness with pornography, maybe you've had a weakness with gambling, with something else, and boom, there it, boom. Boom, calling, inviting, stuff that wouldn't have come your way. Those are issues that we have to look at. Those are things we have to consider. But I want to focus on this in terms of blessing or curse. For many of us, it can be more of a curse unless we really deal with it properly. And here's my bottom line. We live in such an instant society, and it is ever increasingly getting more and more instant. We live in a society that is constantly pulling at us from every possible angle. It's almost like we are totally wired and totally connected 24/7. And that is a terrible spiritual distraction. It makes it difficult for us to step away, to calm ourselves, to calm our hearts, to reflect on the Lord, to worship, to meditate on His Word, to think about deeper things, to have deeper quality interaction even with others. There's something that just pulls and pulls and pulls in a superficial, distracted, impersonal way. And I think it behooves us as believers to ask, in this email age, in this high-tech age, in this constant texting wired age, am I getting deeper in God, or am I getting distracted from what really matters? At the end of the day, have the things that are of eternal value come first, or have they come second, or not come at all? And how much of that distraction, that pulling, that superficial thing eating away at my time. How much of that is email related? Something to think about today on The Line of Fire. AskDrBrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. Check out the book, The Tyranny of Email.